And welcome back to the Kabbalah of Character. This is our seventh lesson, seven out of eight, and we are talking tonight about connections and relationships of many different kinds. As we'll see tonight, there are many forms of relationships, and each requires a healthy dose of connection. They tell a story of a fellow who comes to the rabbi, and he says, "Rabbi, I know you do. Oh, yeah, everyone should have their Kabbalah map, their Kabbalah chart. Yes, what page? 16 or 17? It's maybe 17. I always say 16, but it may actually be 17. Oh, it is 16. Hold on.
16.
Who's counting? Right? Who's counting? Okay, so. But I feel like I should tell my opening story first. True story. Anyway, this man comes to the rabbi. And he says, "Rabbi, very serious situation. You help a lot of people in the community. And you're very charitable. And I feel like you should know about a family in the community that's going through very difficult times. And maybe there's something you can do to help." The rabbi says, "Tell me what's going on." He says, "Well, they've been having job challenges and financial challenges, and they're behind on bills, and it's gotten to a point where this family is way behind on rent, and the landlord now is threatening to evict them. They owe $4,000 or ruble or whatever it is that, you know, in the story. They owe $4,000 of the currency, and they can't pay it, and the landlord is threatening to kick them out into the streets." The rabbi says, "This is terrible. I'm going to put together a committee. We're going to raise the funds for these people. But tell me, how do you know about this family? How do you know about the situation?" He says, "Rabbi, I'm the landlord. I'm the landlord." Such an awkward joke. Awkward joke. Right? Where's the punch? Is that a joke? Is it just hashtag awkward? Okay. So, no, it's... Yeah, is it a joke? I don't know if it's a joke. It's a joke. Yeah. The point is empathy. We'll talk about some of these ideas tonight. We'll talk about charity, tzedakah, etc. as we develop the lesson. Of course, now that we're all settled, pull out your sphere chart, your soul map chart. It looks like this. You may have never seen it before in this series, but this is what it looks like. Let me introduce you to it. It's on page 16. And what this contains are the 10 soul powers. I know there are 11. We've talked about it. Whatever. 10, 11 soul powers. 10 soul powers that we have, each of us has within our soul, and that comprises who and what we are. Knowing this map, knowing who we are, helps us actualize our potential, helps us live up to and live into who we are meant to be. We are up to the second to last soul power, Yesod. This is lesson 7 out of 8. Next week is Malchut. That's the end. This week, the penultimate, second to last, Sephira, soul power, Yesod. Does anybody know the Hebrew translation of Yesod? Yesod. The Hebrew translation of the word Yesod is foundation. Foundation. What does foundation have to do with the soul, with the emotive or functional powers of the soul? I will explain this shortly, but you should know the literal translation of Yesod is base or foundation. So what is Yesod? Yesod in personal, spiritual, psychological, emotional terms, Yesod is the notion of forging a connection, connecting with something outside yourself. It's a known, many of you may know this already, that Jewish thought divides all of existence into four categories. All of existence, all of creation can be divided into four categories or four kingdoms of existence. The lowest is called domeim, which literally means silent. And it refers to inanimate life. Rocks, stones, water, things that don't move, don't have their own self-driven animation. They don't grow, they don't, at least to the naked eye. So that's the first category of life. The next category above it is, literally also, is tzomeach. Tzomeach means vegetation. That's anything that grows from the ground. Plants, trees, grass, anything that grows, tzomeach. The next level up is called chai. Chai means life. That refers to animals. Animals which are alive. Not only do they grow from small to large, but they also have, in other words, there's some sort of animation. They can also move. Trees can't move. Right? Trees can't, at least, you know, unless they're a school play, and some kid is playing the tree and getting antsy on stage and you see the tree moving. Otherwise, trees don't move. They have roots, and the roots ground them literally to the earth. So domeim tzomeach chai. So inanimate life, vegetation, animal life. The highest category, according to Jewish thought, Jewish mysticism, Jewish philosophy, is the midaber, the human being. But the phrase, the one word phrase that the human being is referred to in Judaism is midaber. Midaber means the communicator. Dibur means communication or speech. Midaber means the communicator, the one who's doing the communicating. Why are human beings called the communicator? You would think that human beings should be called the intellectual, the maskil. Because we can say that although animals have a certain degree of intelligence, and animals certainly have a certain degree of intelligence, although that's true, human beings have an even greater level of intelligence. A level of intelligence that is not easily replicated amongst anything that we know of in the universe. I know we're looking for intelligent life, and we've been sending up signals and sending out scouts and looking around any intelligent life out there. We haven't found it. When we talk about intelligent life, yes, dolphins can communicate. And gorillas have forms of communication, and animals can be trained, and seals, all this. But it doesn't compare. You know, we talk about Tolstoy, and you have War and Peace, or Anna, what's the, Anna Karenina? Karenina, how do you pronounce it? Karenina. So many nuz there. Anna Karenina, you have... With all due respect to the animal kingdom, I don't know that any animal can pull off novels and works of creativity on that level. So you would think that if the human being is going to be turned by some sort of exclusive one-word appellation, some sort of one-word description, it would be the maskil, the intellectual. What differentiates the human being from all other life? Seichel, intelligence. In fact, that is... Those are the high soul powers. I refer back to the chart with great glee, right? So these are the high, this is the highest point of the soul. You would think intelligence would be the one word description, the one word that characterizes what allows the human being, what differentiates the human being from all other forms of life. And yet, in Jewish philosophy and Jewish mysticism, the human being is not called the maskil, although also is called the maskil, but the human being is specifically referred to as the medaber. Medaber. The reason, the communicator. Why? Because intelligence and thought is still inside of you. The true meaning of a human being, what truly displays the greatness of the human being, is that you and I don't need to be stuck within ourselves. Because intelligence is still you in your head. But speech is you moving away from yourself to someone else. It's including someone else. Share in your thoughts and your feelings. It's sharing with someone else. It's allowing someone else to share with you. That is the modality. That is the world of communication. It's about sharing and transcending self. So seichel, wisdom, intelligence, it's wonderful. It's very lofty. But it's still limited to you. It's your understanding. Speech, on the other hand, speech is transcendent. Speech is you leaving yourself to connect with someone or to connect with someone else. And so speech is a good parallel for what we're talking about vis-a-vis Yesod. Yesod means that you can connect. Yesod, power number 9 out of 10 of the soul, is our ability, my ability, your ability, to leave yourself, to open yourself up, and connect with someone else in a deep way. Certain people you can speak to for an hour, and after the hour they've told you lots of things, but you don't know anything about them. Right? You can speak to them for an hour and have a great conversation, and it's funny and it's interesting and it's engaging, but you feel like they didn't give you themselves. They didn't give themselves over to you. They didn't. They kept it. They shared. The communication happened right here, from the lips outward. It just, they threw ideas, they threw words at you, but they didn't give themselves. Some people you can speak to for 5 minutes and you feel connected. You feel the connection, and you know the connection when you have the connection. Right? So you can have a conversation and ideas being shared and information being shared. It's an exchange of ideas, exchange of information, but you're not connecting. You're not connecting deeply. You can speak for a minute, 5 minutes, 3 minutes, and you can be instantly connected. You feel like that person is opening themselves up to you, and you feel like you want to open yourself up to them. So Yesod is our ability, not just to speak or to share, but to connect. To really connect and to really bond with someone else. So I want to give you these terms to write next to Yesod if you're taking notes. Yesod is connection. Deep connection. Yesod is oftentimes translated as bonding. Remember that Crazy Glue commercial? With the guy with the helmet and the steel beam? Or is that super glue? I can never get it right. Huh? Super glue? Crazy glue? Magnets? Gorilla glue? Who knows anymore? Who knows anymore? It's all epoxy to me. Here's... Guys, you're stuck with me tonight. Oh my God! Alright. We'll stop now. So here's the point. The point is that Yesod is connection, and it's also bonding. And I said before, I gave you the literal translation of Yesod. What was it?
Foundation.
Why foundation? Think about the foundation of a building. How does that work? How does the foundation of a
building... You can't connect the rest of the building, and it's not going to stand along without a foundation.
But let's break it down even further. If I take a structure, and I just place it on the ground, so the two points are touching, my structure and the ground, is that a foundation? What's a foundation? To hollow it out. It's a deep connection. It's not just a surface connection. It's a deep connection. That's what Yesod is. Yesod is not just, now I'm bridging the literal translation with the conceptual, with the concept of Yesod. Yesod is not just two people being in the same room exchanging, you know, vibrations of sound, exchanging sound waves to each other. Yesod is connecting deeply with someone else. Yesod is sharing deeply. It's opening yourself up. It's carving out a place within yourself for the other person and them for you. Yesod is digging the foundation and connecting deeply and not connecting on a surface level. So a deep connection brings out further depth. When you feel connected with someone on a deeper level, so you're more likely to be more open and to continue to share deep ideas and deep concepts with the other person. So that's what Yesod is. Yesod is deeply connecting, wanting to deeply connect. They feel like you're connecting, so they want to connect deeply with you. It's not just love and attraction. That means that you're attracted, you want to get close to the other person, you want to connect. This is a deep connection. This is the ability to really connect, not just surface to surface, but in a very deep and intertwined way. It's connecting our whole selves, our wants, our desires, our thoughts, our feelings, etc. In other words, yesod, which stands at the bottom. It's kind of like where everything comes filtered down, right? It comes from yesod into malchut, which we'll talk about next week. Yesod is the final point. In a sense, it collects and it gathers all of the other energies prior to it, all of the other soul powers. From the pleasure, the soul's pleasure, keter, the higher level of keter. The soul's desire, the lower level of keter. Wisdom, ideas, understanding, feelings, love, whatever it is, you take all of that, whatever is inside of you, and you share that deeply with someone else, that's what yesod is. Yesod is the ability to connect deeply with another. Kabbalistically, what is yesod? Spiritually, yesod is, within the process of creation, it's the power that transmits the higher sefirot, the higher energies, the higher divine energies, with malchut. Malchut is the idea of receptivity, receiving. Malchut is receiving, taking in something, absorbing from someone else or something else. So yesod collects all of the higher energies, divine energies, and transmits them into the sefirah, into the realm of malchut. And so the same thing is true within the human being. Yesod takes all of what we're thinking and feeling, everything that exists prior to yesod, so to speak, in this schematic, and yesod shares it with someone else in a deep and connected way. So examples of yesod in action are certainly when we talk about a good friend. If you have a very meaningful friendship and relationship, so it's about sharing with someone that you care about the things that are really important to you. Not just sharing, oh, what's the weather? Oh, it sounds like it's raining outside. Which it actually is, apparently. It's sharing something deep about yourself, something perhaps vulnerable about yourself, and they feel open to sharing that with you. That's what yesod is. Yesod is that connection. The connection happens with people that we are, of course, close with. Now, yesod really manifests itself in two parts, and they're really two halves of the same coin. Number one, when your yesod is activated, you want to connect deeply with the other person. You want a deeper connection, not just a superficial connection. You don't just want to relate to them, you want to relate everything to them. It's to give everything, to give the deepest part of yourself and your being a real connection, not just a surface encounter. That's number one. Number two, you want the other person to also connect in a deep way. So you want to share yourself deeply with the other, and you want the other to connect with you deeply as well. And that is by virtue of them receiving, which again is a little bit about malchut, but that's your desire. Your desire is not only to give of yourself, but that they should take and receive of you, and in turn, that they should give from themselves back to you. That is the desire of yesod. It's really three parts. Giving of yourself, wishing that they receive it in a deep way within themselves, and that they in turn share that with you. Giving, them giving, and you receiving. In a healthy relationship, both parties are doing the giving and the receiving. If relationships exist where only one party is doing all the giving and the other is doing all the receiving, it's a bit, Kabbalistically, it's a bit of an imbalanced relationship. Kabbalah uses the phrase mashpia and mekabel. The phrases, the Hebrew terms mashpia and mekabel. Mashpia is the one who is giving or sharing or influencing. Mekabel is the one who's receiving, who's absorbing, who's taking in. In a healthy relationship dynamic, both parties are being both the mashpia and the mekabel. Both parties are sharing, giving, digging deep, and putting forth something deep from within, and in turn receiving something deep from the other. Like most of the soul powers that we've discussed, the healthy version of yesod requires healthy humility. It's about carving out, digging deep within. It's almost like, you know, to really share what you're really thinking, what you're really feeling. It requires you to, we use these phrases, dig deep or digging deep. There's a reason why. it's easier to exist on the surface. It's easier to exist superficially. It's harder to open yourself up to someone else. It's harder to really pull from deep inside and share that with someone else. But that's what Yesod is. That's what a real connection is. So it requires digging and hollowing out, or, you know, extracting from yourself to give and to receive. It's the same thing. Although the focus today is not on receiving, but it's part of this exchange. The receiving is also allowing yourself to be open, hollowing yourself out, digging out your ego to allow yourself to accept and receive from someone else. So again, Yesod has multiple components. It's about digging deep to give some point of depth to the other, desiring a deep connection and giving something deep, desiring that they receive it, and in turn that they continue that exchange the other way as well. So, the definition of a mensch through the lens of Yesod. What does it mean to be a mensch? What does it mean to be a mensch, a good, decent, moral, upstanding, spiritual, holy human being through the lens of Yesod, the soul power of Yesod? It means that in your interactions in life, it means that you're really present. You're not just pretending that you're present. You're really and genuinely there in that moment, in that exchange. You're present, you're open, you're ready to connect, and you are connecting with the other. This is so important in life. I say this often in various contexts, and it makes sense to say this again here tonight. There are certain times that people say things that make sense to say in that context, but they say it devoid of the feeling and the actual force that it would contain if they actually meant it. There are certain things that we know should be scripted into this part of the conversation. So you said this, I ought to say this back to you. Because I know that in the scripts of life, as a human being, that's what I should say at this point in time. But it's not actually coming from a genuine place. And usually the recipient of that, of those words, can sense that it's not really so genuine. And I'm not only talking about if somebody is texting and talking at the same time, and that's its own challenge, because we're not being present. I'm talking about even if somebody is looking at you in the eye, and it seems like, by all accounts, they're communicating, but you can tell there's a certain hollowness. It's not genuine. There's a tragedy that happened recently in Colorado. Some of you may be aware of this. Yes?
Yes.
The husband and the wife and the two kids and the... Okay. I'm not going to get into the details. If you don't know the story, it's fine also. I mean, it's a horrific story. This fellow, allegedly, by all accounts, it seems like he murdered his wife, pregnant wife, and his two young daughters, 4 and 3 years old. There's a film crew, local TV station the next day. And he's doing an appeal on TV. He doesn't know where his wife. He's saying he doesn't know where his wife and daughters are. You can look at that footage, and not be an expert not be an expert detective and whatever it is. You look at it. There's nothing genuine. He's saying the things that you would expect someone to say, missing out a lot of things that you would have said, like, I'm scared to death what happened to her, to them. I'm very afraid. His focus is on, the house is not the same without them. You know, the house is lonely. It's all about... It's nothing about... There's an acute lack of realness in the words that he's saying. And you see a person really trying to sell that type of appeal to the cameras. Missing person, missing, you know, family members missing. He's really, you can tell he's really trying, and it's really not working. You can, again, it's a horrific story. You can look it up and see the video. But it's striking how artificial his presentation is. On a much less extreme level, we all have these moments. And maybe, again, not to compare, God forbid to compare the two scenarios, but sometimes we may catch ourselves being the ones that are reciting the lines without feeling the feelings. That means that we are speaking without yesod. I've been asked before in classes, how can Judaism refer to the human being as the medaber, as the communicator, when you have, as the differentiating force of the human being, power of the human being, when there are other animals and creatures that also speak and communicate, like a parrot. There are birds that speak. And so, if you talk about communication, birds are also communicators. Animals, birds, you know the story about the parrot? You know the joke about the parrot? I'm not going to pretend it's a story. You know this one? I feel like I just told it recently.
Did they walk into a bar together?
No. So a fellow buys a parrot. Okay, very quickly. A fellow buys a parrot. And it's in the store, it's incredible. This parrot is eloquent. It recites Shakespeare and sings opera. This parrot is incredible. This fellow falls in love with the parrot. He's like, what kind of amazing bird is this? This is a genius bird. How much? $1,000. $1,000 for a bird? Yeah. Puts down the money, collects it, puts it down, buys the bird, takes the bird home. The minute he takes the bird home, the bird begins chastising him, berating him, criticizing him, making fun of him. Why don't you ever leave the house? Where's your friends? Like, berating him and saying terrible things to him. Vulgarity, huh?
Did he marry the bird?
No. Oh, yeah. So he is... No, citizen. So he's feeling like, what is this? I said the bird was so lovely and so beautiful and so poetic and so... You know, and now the bird is turned so... Day after day, finally one day he snaps. He says, "That's it. I can't handle this language from this bird. This harassment from this bird." He takes the bird, the parrot. He opens up the freezer. He throws the bird. I'm not advocating. No actual birds were harmed. No real birds were harmed in the creation of this joke. And I'm not saying this is an afternoon special. Do not put your parrot or other birds or other animals in a freezer. Nonetheless, I'm telling you what happened in this joke. This fellow puts the parrot in the freezer. And immediately, the bird stops talking. And it's silent. And his first thought is, oh, wow, a machai. You know what machai is? Such a pleasure, finally, the bird, the 24/7 on my case, finally. But as the seconds tick by, he starts getting a little bit nervous. What did I do? Can birds survive in a freezer? And he begins to panic. And shortly afterwards, he quickly, about 60 seconds after he first puts in the parrot, he quickly opens up the freezer. And there the parrot is standing, perched on one of the shelves, looking very contrite and apologetic. And the bird says, "I apologize for everything that I've ever said to you that's negative. And you have my word and my honor that I will not repeat this behavior ever again. I will be the bird that you thought I was when you purchased me." And the man says, "Wow, 60 seconds in the freezer, that's pretty impressive." The bird says, "Answer one question for me, please." He says, "Sure. What did the chicken do wrong?" What did the chicken do wrong? Yes. Please pull us back into the discussion.
So if we don't have any animal linguists in the house, which I'm guessing we don't, but we know that animals, and some are incredibly smart, elephants, dolphins, octopi come to mind.
Yes.
How do we know, and I use
we know one thing. They haven't... I don't know that what I was about to say makes sense. Look, I don't know. I'm not an animal expert, and I haven't studied their, you know, their methods of communication. But I'll tell you this. For the human being to parrot words, that's really what I was going for. For a human being to parrot words and to say words that another person would say if they meant it, I don't really mean it, but I'm going to say it because it fits into this part of the conversation, that's not being a mensch. That's not what it means to be human. I want to focus less on if animals or whatever don't have it and more of what we should strive toward. Yesod is about not parroting, not repeating words or phrases because they sound good or they look good or we feel like they're appropriate to say in the moment, devoid of the actual meaning and feeling. Yesod means that we're communicating in a menschy fashion. That means that we're present, we're open, we're connecting, we're being real. We're not being artificial. It's all about being real. So I want to spend the next little bit focused on three specific areas in which Yesod is critically important. Areas in which maybe we would have thought without this context, without this point of reference, that maybe it doesn't need so much Yesod. But as we'll see tonight, these three areas in life, amongst many others, require Yesod at their core to be successful. The first is a favorite topic in Judaism and in Kabbalah, and that is the topic of education. Why is education such a popular topic? Because, look, Jews are the people of the book, and one of the most famous biblical passages, Jewish prayers, we have it on our doorposts, mezuzah scroll, on every doorway of the home, we have, or the synagogue, we have these reminders, these scrolls. And what's in the scroll? The Shema. What does it say in the Shema? V'shinantam levanecha v'dibarta bam. You shall teach it to your children, and you should speak of them. Study the Torah, study the Bible, and teach it to our children. So education is a very strong, not only biblical value, but certainly a Jewish value. So in discussing practical applications of Yesod, one area that we'll speak of, the first area that we'll speak of is in the field of education. One of the differentiators between a good teacher and a great teacher, or what I would call a teacher that is sound in the philosophies of Jewish education, is the difference between saying ideas and sharing ideas with another versus caring deeply about the students that they should learn the ideas. Two different realities. One model is, the teacher says, I have the information, right, in my cup in Yiddish's head, but we'll use that, an actual physical cup, in my cup. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to pour it on your cup or into your cup. So I'll take an idea from my head and I'll send it your direction and then you'll learn it and that's it. So I'm going to pour ideas on your head. That's one method. There's another method of teaching. Totally different. This teacher is not just about presenting information or imparting knowledge. This teacher is all about connecting deeply with the student. That's the objective. The objective is, it's also about the information, but that's not the be-all and end-all. It's not only about the information. It's not just taking information and sharing it with someone else. It's about connecting deeply with the student. And when you connect deeply with the student, then they're open to learning. But it's forging that connection and forging it first. And how is the connection forged? Because you care about them. When a teacher cares about the student, the teacher is driven to forge a relationship with the student. And when you have a relationship with the student, now you can communicate. Now you can connect. Now you can educate. It's not just sharing information, it's connecting on a deep level. And the student perceives that the teacher is not just trying to, you know, throw ideas at them, but the student senses that the teacher really cares that they connect, that he or she, the student, connects with the lesson as well. Really cares. Not just because it's my job, so I'm you know, directing information your way, but I really care that you receive it and understand it and connect with it. Let's take a look at text number one. Ray, please read text one from the book of Tanya about Yesod in the context of education. And I want you to pay attention as Ray reads this, please. This is for everyone in this room. Pay attention to the very specific educational example that the Alter Rebbe, Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Liadi, brings in this example. Text number one. Sorry, page 176. So somebody tell me in very short, thank you, Ray. Somebody tell me in short, in their own words, in your own words, briefly, what does Yesod do in the realm of this example of education? What does Yesod?
It connects you. You go deeper.
Okay, good. What's driving it? What words is you? What's driving it?
Love and desire.
Love and desire. What example does he use? Father and a son. Okay. What's the father doing?
He's teaching.
Why doesn't he use the example of a teacher and a student?
Well, because your parents are your original teachers.
Okay. So a parent...
talking about love and...
Parents are a... Parent can be a teacher as well. As well as a, in addition to being just a parent. But the emphasis here is on a teacher or teaching model that's predicated on love and really, really caring that the recipient is getting something and connecting with it, and you're connecting with them, they're connecting with you, and getting something meaningful out of this interaction. A teacher, theoretically, possibly, could fall into a situation or could move into a situation where they're sharing information because it's their job. In this example of the father and the child, the father deeply cares about the child, right? We're talking about a healthy parent, right? Father loves this child. He loves his son, cares deeply about his son. So when he educates his son, it's not just lip service. Yeah, it's not just sharing information. He cares about his son. He cares deeply. With love, look at this. He binds his intellect to the intellect of his son while teaching him with love and willingness. He's not being coerced into this experience, this exchange of ideas. He loves to teach his son. He loves to guide his son. He loves to share wisdom with his son. And he wishes his son to understand. When somebody feels like you care about them, they are so much more likely to listen to you. Simply stated, when someone feels that you care about them, they will likely listen to you. More likely. No guarantees in life, right? But they're more likely to listen to you. When somebody feels like you are discharging an obligation to say certain words to them, and that's what your job is, etc. Either they'll listen, if they're self-motivated, or maybe they won't, or maybe some days yes, some days not. But if they feel that you love them, that you care about them, that you're a... obsessed, but that you really, really are thinking about what they're getting because you care that their character, that their mind is developed, they're much more likely to listen. So the foundation of teaching, according to Judaism, according to Jewish mysticism, according to Kabbalah, the foundation of education is love and connection, bonding, yesod. You cannot teach effectively without this element. Because teaching is not just conveying information. For a father, in the example that he gives in text 1, for the father, it's not just... the father is not just concerned that his child knows this piece of information. The father is concerned... I don't mean concerned in a negative way. The father is interested in his son being transformed. His son being raised to be a good person, a bright person, someone who's a mensch. And so when the parent's teaching, the parent has an agenda, a positive agenda, but there's an agenda there. And the agenda is something deep should happen. And the father cares about the son. Without that concern and care, etc., there's a great book authored by the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Schneerson, who passed away in 1950. And it's a slim volume. It's called The Principles of Guidance in Education. In the Hebrew, it has an original Hebrew title. It's Klali HaChinuch V'Hadracha. In English, the translated version is The Principles of Education and Guidance. And it's relatively short. It's a small book, but it's packed with ideas, packed with information. He talks about this idea and he elaborates on it at length. A teacher, in order, the prerequisite to teaching is, first of all, knowing yourself. Secondly, knowing the student, caring about the student, wanting to connect deeply with the student and connecting deeply with the student. The exchange of information is the very last piece of this. It's the very last piece. At the end of all of that work, inside yourself and inside the other, after all of that work, then you can transmit the information. It's like, anybody have Google Fiber? Do you know what Google Fiber is?
Yes.
Okay, anybody have it? And it took 2 years to get. Took 2 years to get. Upwards of 2 years. Signed up, waited. What was happening? I have no idea. But here's what I know. They were digging up the streets of Atlanta and laying cable or laying fiber optic cable. Also a form of cable, fiber optic cable. And then they were running it on the lines. What do they call them? I'm a rabbit. Power lines, thank you. Right, they're running it on the power lines with all the other lines. And then I get a knock on my door like a month or two ago. A knocks on my door. He's like, I'm with Google Fiber. I'm like, now listen, we're waiting for, one of the fundamentals of Judaism is waiting for the Mashiach. You know, you wait for Messiah. I'm not comparing the two at all. I'm just saying, however, when that guy knocked on the door and he's like, I'm with Google Fiber, I'm like, I've been waiting for you so long. It wasn't the same.
It was special. Very special.
And he's like, can I run a line from the power lines to a box inside of your house? I'm like, yes, you can. So he ran the line, and then another guy came by 2 days later to check that the connection was created between their power lines outside on the street and the side of the house. And then another guy came a week later. And what he did was he connected a line from the box to a thing, a box on the wall on the inside of the house, like a jack, something right on the inside of the house. Huh? No, this is before then. This is the jack on the wall. And then that from there you run another line to the Google Fiber box, which is the modem. And then that is also a router and whatever. And I have hooked up my own router. That's the whole thing. Okay. Anyway, the good news is I have internet. That's the good news. I don't know if it's the good news. That's the end of the story. But here's the deal. Here's the deal. The first thing you need to do is create the connections. I'm doing my own eye. It's fine. I'm self-eyeing. I'm self-eyeing at this point. It doesn't matter. First thing you need to do is create the connections. If you don't make the connections, you can have Google Fiber running and hacking and moving and trucks rumbling down the street and digging up the streets and whatnot. And it doesn't matter. You're not getting internet. You have to create the connections. You have to dig. You have to drill. Whatever else they did. You got to do all that stuff to create connections. Once you have the connections, everything's connected. Flick the switch and it goes right in. If you're transmitting, and it's not being received, you say, what's wrong with the other person? Did you create a connection? Did you create a connection? They're not listening. They're not listening. They're not listening. Did you create a connection? How can they listen if you didn't create a connection? It's like saying, I don't know, I have no internet. Do you have any wires in your house? No. So what is this, wireless? Okay. So I have a joke here, but we did too many of them already. So I'm gonna back off the next joke, the wireless joke. Here's the point. In teaching, before you impart the information, ask yourself, as a teacher, did you make the connection? The Talmud says that Rabba, the great sage Rabba, before he would begin teaching, at the beginning of his life, now he was one of the great Talmudic sages, Abaye and Rava, but their teacher was Rabba. Rabba was a great teacher. And the Talmud says before he began his teaching, he would always make a joke, always say a joke. And after he delivered a joke and everyone laughed, then he began teaching. And in Kabbalah, they asked the question. We studied it Sunday mornings at our class, Kabbalah and Coffee. Every Sunday morning, 9:30 to 11, you're all invited. In the Kabbalistic text, the question is asked, why is it that Rabbah opened with a joke? Why? He's a serious teacher. A serious teacher presenting serious information. Jewish law, right? What's he doing telling jokes? What, is he a comedian? And the answer that's given is, he wanted to open his students up. He wanted to create a connection. Without a connection, you can't transmit the information. There has to be a connection. And that's Yesod. Yesod is creating the connection and then filling that connection with content. You can't just throw content and expect it to stick without forging that connection first. The same thing is true with parenting, with mentoring, with educating. Whether it's our children, grandchildren, or in mentoring others, it doesn't matter. The question that we have to ask ourselves is, how do we offer guidance and instruction? Oftentimes, in the moment, we dispense information. Hey, don't do this. Do that. It's very spontaneous. Right? And parents can sometimes feel, and children certainly can feel, that parents are morphing into police officers. It's like, don't do this, do that, stop, go. The question is, have we built that connection? Have we forged that bond? Of course, there's a natural bond between a parent and a child. But the question is, have we nurtured? Have we deepened? Have we nurtured that connection? If we've nurtured that connection, then there's an opening to connect. If you haven't nurtured the connection, then all of the instruction, all of the guidance, all of the information can fall on deaf ears. It's about the connection more than anything else. Yeah.
Is that also true, like, for teachers?
I think the greatest teachers are the ones in any field, are the ones where the students feel connected to the teacher. Because when you feel connected, you're open to learning, whatever it is. Certainly, if we're talking about morals and ethics and values and whatever, yeah, certainly that's the case. Like life guidance type things. But even if it's you know, a general subject, mathematics, a formula, physics, whatever. It doesn't matter. The student is going to learn when they feel a connection. More likely to learn when they feel a connection.
What if you create a connection serve parts in, like, for example, something like math teacher, like, instead of to connect to teacher, you say, like, you connected to math, and you make it like you students connected.
You're saying through the subject, because the passion for the subject.
Right.
You could do that. No, that certainly is a way to do it, to foster them a love for the subject and connect on that level. But they're more likely to follow you and to listen to you and to connect with you when they have that connection, when you're intentionally creating that connection. And I think that's a good word to point out. It's intentional. Sometimes we think that if I have the information, I have the wisdom, and they don't, why shouldn't they listen to me? They should be clamoring to listen. I have the information. Sometimes parents can think that about their kids. Why aren't they listening? I have the information. I have the life experience. Right? I have the sage advice. Why aren't they listening? What's wrong with them? Why aren't they listening? The question is simple. Have we done everything in our power to create that connection? It's not about the instruction. It's about the connection. If you have the connection, the instruction will flow. Hopefully. If you don't have but the main point is the connection. If you don't have the connection, then all the instruction, all the wisdom, all the guidance in the world is going to fall on deaf ears. So, we can't emphasize enough how important this idea of the love and the dedication and the desire to connect is in any area of communication. It's critical. Yeah. I want to just add one more layer to that. It's not just about being passionate about the subject, although that helps. It's about also being passionate about them, about the students. But it's not only about the subject. That's the point. It's not only about the subject. It's about the interpersonal connection. It's about that bond. I'm not saying that you can't be an effective teacher if you would love. Anybody watch TED Talks? Like those TED Talks things? Yeah, TED Talks. So there's one Jewish fellow who is the head of some sort of orchestra conductor in Boston. I wish I had more information. I wish I remembered his name. Anyway, he speaks about classical music and how many people are not so excited about classical music. But he's all into classical music. And he talks about how people should be into classical music. But he shares it with such enthusiasm and such passion and such love that you end up thinking, wow, I love classical music as well. This guy's awesome. Because his love for the topic is such a high level. It's infectious. You also love it because he loves it. So there is effectiveness in that methodology. But what Judaism, what Kabbalah teaches about Yesod, it's that personal connection. It's not just about the subject, and it's not just being passionate about the subject and sharing that passion with others. It's caring about the student. It's really caring about the student. Having their best interests in mind. Okay, so that's about education. Again, real education is when the parent or the educator is educating from a place of connection with the other. It's not just about the surface interaction, it's about the bond and connection on a deep level. Let's talk about a second area of life in which Yesod connection is critical. We spoke about education, mentoring, parenting. Let's speak about another area which seems completely different. Let's talk about tzedakah. Tzedakah is typically translated as charity. Charity, giving, generosity, etc. This is another example of the giver-receiver relationship. Like teaching, where someone's giving and someone's receiving. So charity, tzedakah, is also a similar model. Someone's giving and someone is receiving. Tzedakah as well. Charity too can be in two ways. It could either be the product of an external surface interaction, or it can be a deep, essential connection and experience. When yesod is absent, then the giving is superficial. It's a very external interaction and it's done. Somebody asked, I gave, and it's done. No connection, just giving. Whereas when yesod is present in giving, it's a completely different, it's a completely different ballgame, it's a completely different relationship. There is a relationship. There is a connection between the two parties. So what is the premise of this? What is the premise of the difference between and let me use terminology here. Charity, we can say, charity evokes the first type of giving, where a person feels like they're doing something nice by giving, but it's really not about connecting with the other. It's me being generous and giving to someone else, but it's not really about forging a bond and a connection. It's not intertwining oneself with the other, it's just giving. It's more charity. What is tzedakah in Hebrew? What does tzedakah mean?
Righteousness.
Tzedek. Tzadik. Righteousness. What does it mean, righteousness? It means that it's the right thing to do. It's not just the generous thing to do, it's the right thing to do. Why is it the right thing to do? So there are many teachings, many sources in Judaism that point to the same idea, and it's a beautiful idea. One perspective on tzedakah is the following meditation. It's that God has given me, has blessed me with the resources that I need for myself, and has also blessed me and given me resources, additional resources that really belong to someone else. Again, this is the meditation. That God has given me and blessed me, obviously through my efforts, and I had to make a channel and I had to work for it, fine. But God has blessed me with resources for myself and extra, some extra, that God is putting in my trust for the sake of someone else. So God is basically giving us not only ours, but someone else's. Which is why, in the Jewish philosophy of giving, to not give is not just to not be, you know, extending oneself and generous, but to not give actually sometimes can be termed misappropriation of funds. Because if God is giving us, the meditation is, if the thought is, the philosophy, the Kabbalah is, that God is giving us, not only for us, but additional, more than what we directly need for our basic needs. More than that, right? If God is giving us, blessing us with more, then that means that God is putting those funds for someone else in our trust and saying, basically, the only reason why I'm giving this to you is to share this with someone else. So if we turn around and pocket it, keep it for ourselves, and don't share a little bit, the extra, however we determine that, with someone else, it's straight up, can be considered misappropriating the funds. It's like any case of, you know, you're entrusted to deliver monies or funds to someone else, and you siphon it for yourself. So that's a Jewish perspective on tzedakah, as opposed to charity. Charity is, it's all mine, and when I'm feeling generous, I'll be charitable and give it to someone else. I'll give mine away to someone else. What is tzedakah? What is tzedakah? It's not charity. It's not charitable. Tzedakah is doing what's right. It's not above and beyond. Huh? It's doing what's right. It's tzedek. It's the right thing to do. Why? Because we've been given extra for someone else. How can we even think to keep it for ourselves? So that's just so you know the difference between charity and tzedakah. And I know that every time the Hebrew word tzedakah appears, it's always translated in the Torah and the Chumash and the prayer books. It's always in articles. It's always translated as charity. But you should know that the two mean completely opposite things or represent completely opposite perspectives and ideals. Tzedakah means extra, above and beyond. I didn't have to. I did it anyway. Whatever. That's charity. Tzedakah means God gave it to me for this purpose and I'm fulfilling my obligation in giving it to its intended recipient. That's tzedakah. Charity and tzedakah are two completely different experiences. Should be two different words. Which is why I usually try to stick with tzedakah, just to highlight that it's different. By the way, there are three words that are associated with the high holiday season. Teshuva, tefillah, tzedakah. In the master, in the prayer books, we say three things get rid of the negative decree and bring a positive decree for the new year, for the Jewish New Year. Teshuva, tefillah, and tzedakah, which are translated in every prayer book, high holiday prayer book that I've seen. Repentance, prayer, and charity avert the negative decree. Repentance, prayer, and charity. And all three are wrong. All three are wrong. Teshuva doesn't mean repentance. Teshuva means return. And return is different than repentance. Repentance means sounds like you have to find something new. I was on a bad path. I have to find something new. Where do I go? Where do I look? Teshuva means you just have to return to who you are. Return to who you are because who you are is good. Just get back to yourself. Totally different than repentance, which is finding a new path. Teshuva is rediscovering yourself. Teshuva and repentance, totally different. Tefillah, translated as prayer. Prayer in Hebrew is bakasha. It's requesting something. Tefillah is not requesting. It's not a laundry list. Hey, God, here's what I need. Boom, 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 boom. How soon can you get this to me? That's not what tefillah is. Tefillah means connection. Kind of like yisod. Tefillah is connecting. It's not praying. It's not asking for things. Tefillah is connecting. And tzedakah is not charity, but it's righteousness. If you have this meditation in mind, and it's fixed in your mind and your consciousness, let's talk about tzedakah, that the resources, whether it's money or other resources, wisdom is also a form of charitable giving, and time is also a gift that we've been given that we have sometimes extra to share with others. Our hearts, our shoulders to cry on, our ears to listen, right? It's not only the money, but whatever it is. If our meditation of tzedakah is, God has blessed us with more than we need for just us, and the only reason why we have it is to share it with someone else, and therefore it's my duty, my obligation to do right, and then to share it with someone else, that's my meditation. You know what that means? My fate and their fate are intertwined, tied together. God gave me that person's, some of that person's resources. God gave it to me to redirect to them because it's theirs. God entrusted me for their support. First of all, that's humbling. That God is entrusting us. God says, I trust you to deliver these resources to that person and not to misdirect it along the way. So number one, it's a vote of confidence. But number two, getting back to the point here, it bespeaks, it evokes a tremendous intertwining of fates. My fate and their fate. It's not just a random person on the street that asked me for a buck. It's someone who their, whatever it is, even that dollar, their dollar was given to me to give back to them. But it's theirs. That's a meditation in giving, in tzedakah, that is much deeper than just a surface interaction, once off, I gave, and no connection. Tolstoy once said, recounted this story. He said he was walking somewhere in Russia, and it was a time when he was broke, he didn't have any money. And somebody approached him on the street and asked him for some money. And he said, I'm sorry, my brother, I have nothing to give. And he said, "No, don't say that. You just gave me something." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "It's been years since somebody called me my brother." That's also giving. That's giving. Giving means connecting. Tzedakah means connection. It's also about giving the money if you have the money, but it's primarily about the connection. That's what tzedakah is. And again, the meditation of tzedakah is connected, intertwined with this idea of connection. It's all about connection. Let's turn all the way to text number 22. Text 22 is a very famous text that stems from the writings of Maimonides. And in this text, Maimonides discusses the 8 degrees, 8 levels of charitable giving. 8 ways to give tzedakah. And he ranks them one greater than the next. Ilana, please read this one. Text 22, page 191.
There are 8 degrees of charity, one higher than the other. The highest degree, exceeded by none, is that of a person who assists a poor Jew by providing him with a gift, or a loan, or by accepting him into a business partnership, or by helping him find employment. In a word, by putting him where he can dispense with other people's aid.
And by dispense, it means where he can do away with needing someone else. You're helping someone get on their 2 feet. Continue.
A step below this stands the one who gives alms to the needy in such a manner that the giver knows not to whom he gives, and the recipient knows not from whom he takes. This is an example performing an act for its own sake. Thus was done in the temple's chamber of secrecy, where the righteous would place their gift clandestinely, and where poor people of high lineage would come in secret and help themselves to aid. One step lower is that in which the giver knows to whom he gives, but the poor person knows not from whom he receives. Examples of this were the great sages who would go forth and throw coins covertly into poor people's doorways. A step lower is that in which a poor person knows from whom he is taking, but the giver knows not to whom he is giving. Example of this were the great sages, who would tie their coins to their scarves, which they would fling over their shoulders so that the poor might help themselves without suffering shame. The next degree lower is that of him who, with his own hand, bestows a gift before the poor person asks. The next degree lower is that of him who gives only after the poor person asks. The next degree lower is that of him who gives less than is fitting, but gives with a gracious attitude. The next degree lower is that of him who gives grudgingly.
What differentiates between the higher levels and the lower levels? Like, what makes one, in Maimonides' conception of giving, what makes one higher than the other? Can you see a pattern?
Compassion. A lot of sacrifice.
Compassion. I would say more compassion and dignity. The more you maintain the dignity of the recipient, the more you care about the recipient, and the more dignified you make that experience, or you allow that experience to be, that is a higher level of giving. That's why the highest level of giving is where the other person doesn't even feel like they're taking. If you help someone find a job where they're working for their own income, they don't feel like they're taking. They feel like they are contributing. That is the greatest form of giving. It's giving someone not just the money or the potential to earn money consistently, which is also tremendous, but it's giving a person their dignity and self-worth. And that happens when you actually care about the other person. The more you care about the other, which is yesod, the more you feel connected with the other, the more you will be concerned and care about their dignity. If it's just a surface, one-time interaction or exchange with that person, then it doesn't matter. I'll give them the money, I'll give them less than what they want, I'll give them grudgingly, yeah, take it, whatever, and it won't mean anything because they don't mean anything, God forbid, to me. The more I care about them, that's when it's absent of yesod. When my giving is absent of yesod, I'm more likely to fall into one of the lower categories of giving if I give altogether. But when I feel connection, when I feel yesod, when yesod is present, the giving experience takes on an entirely different dynamic. When I care about the other person, I will care to make sure that their dignity is preserved. So if it's a gift, maybe it's anonymous. So that I don't know and they don't know. So that when I see them or they see me walking down the street, they don't need to feel embarrassed. They don't need to feel like a little ashamed because they know that I gave and I know that they know, etc. When I care about the other, I will seek out their best interest. I will seek out dignified forms of giving in which they feel empowered and noble and not in any way to make them feel less than or unfortunate or we say in Hebrew, Yiddish, a Rachmanis case, I don't know how to translate, a mercy case or someone that you should take pity on. No one wants to be a pity case. So the point is like this. Where if yesod is missing, if you're not connected with the other, you don't feel any connection, so then you'll just give or you won't give, but it won't be about them. You'll give, but there won't really be that care and concern. When you have yesod, when you feel connected, so then the giving is on a completely different level. So here we have the same idea, this notion of yesod transforming the experience, not only when it comes to education, as we mentioned before, that the absence of yesod, it's very difficult to get through to a student or to a child. With yesod, you can get through to them, and they're open to listen because you forge that connection. The same thing is true with giving. Without yesod, the giving might be undignified. With yesod, it will more likely be on a dignified level. So when we feel connected with someone, we will give in a more gracious fashion. It reminds me of a story. Share this very quick story. I'll share this story very quickly. There was a rabbi who lived a few hundred years ago. His name was Rabbi Yom Tov Lipman Heller. He wrote a commentary on the Mishnah called the Tosfot Yom Tov. Lived a few hundred years ago. Very, very great scholar, very great rabbi. And story goes that in his town, where he was a rabbi, there was a man who was very wealthy. And this man was known for one thing, in addition to his wealth. And that is, he did not give. Whenever they went to him for a cause, a communal cause, an individual cause, a private cause, a spiritual cause, the man said, no, I'm not going to participate. And people disliked him because of this. The Jewish community disliked this fellow. You have a Jewish fellow who's the wealthiest man in town, who doesn't support Jewish causes, doesn't even help out humanitarian causes, nothing. And so he was looked at with such disdain that when he passed away, the burial society, the Jewish burial society of the town, refused to bury him in the main part of the Jewish cemetery. They said that he's Jewish, so they're going to put him in the cemetery, but all the way at the edge. All the way at the edge of the cemetery. And he was buried there. This is a true story. This is what happened. You can go to the town and see it for yourself. What happens next is shortly after, a few days later, knocks on the door of the rabbi, one person after the next. I need money for food for Shabbat, I need money for this, money for my kids, money for the other. Turns out, when the rabbi investigated, all of these people that suddenly came up, this rabbi had been supporting them secretly and covertly, without anybody knowing. And he supported them, and no one knew that he was giving. He lived his whole life generous, but in anonymous fashion. No one knew that he gave. It was never about him. He didn't want any credit. In fact, he took all of the hate. He took it all and accepted it. He did not want to be the one to whom others felt dependent on in a personal, that they should feel embarrassed if they saw him or feel like they have to say thank you every time they see him. He didn't want any of that. He didn't want any dis-ease with others or that others should feel any lack of ease around him. It wasn't about him. He gave anonymously. When the rabbi found out about this, he said to the burial society, when I pass away, put me next to him. And so he's buried next to this fellow. And they changed his stone to reflect his generosity. The point of the story is this. When you care about someone else, when Yesoda's present, you're going to give them in a dignified fashion. You're going to give them in a way that takes them into consideration because you care about them. When Yesoda's missing, so then they're just a faceless, anonymous, nameless human being that's asking for something, and you'll give just another cause or another need or another burden, God forbid, to take away from my stuff to give to someone else. That's when it's missing Yesod. When it has Yesod, completely different experience. Let's talk about the third and final area in which Yesod is critical. And that is in the context of marriage and relationships. Personal relationships. So, whether it's marriage or another form of intimate relationships, so those relationships are also one in which there is a giver and receiver. And again, as I mentioned before, in this case, also in a healthy communication and conversation, both are givers and both are receivers. But the point is there are two partners, there are two actors, if you will, in this exchange, in this experience. And so here Yesod is critical. If it's just you alone, you don't need Yesod. Yesod is all about bonding and connecting with someone else. So marriage, relationships, that's where Yesod is critical and perhaps the most critical. Tragically, it's possible that a marriage that starts off as a deep connection can become nothing more than a surface connection, where individuals are just connected in the most external way, so to speak, but without that deeper connection, without a deeper bond. And that is obviously not an ideal state. An ideal state from a Jewish Kabbalistic perspective of marriage or any relationship is where the connection and the bond is deep and essential and it goes beyond the surface, which means that any healthy relationship, truly healthy relationship, needs a healthy dose of Yesod. Let's take a look at some texts. Some texts that speak about the first human relationship in history, that of Adam and Eve. James, please read text 2a, please. Back to 177. Back to 177. 2a.
God created man in his image, male and female, he created them.
So here's a verse from Genesis 1, where it talks about God creating the first human being, male and female. And there's another narrative in the second chapter of Genesis where it says that God creates Adam, and then from Adam's side, Eve is formed. But here in chapter 1 of Genesis, it doesn't say that. It says that male and female, Zachar Nekeva, Bara Otam, he created them male and female. So what does that mean and what happened? Text 2b, please continue 2b from the Midrash. James.
Oh.
Still you.
Rabbi Yirmiyah.
Yep.
Then Elazar said, when God created the first man, he created him as male and female. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman said, when God created the first man, he created him with these two aspects. Then he separated them.
So the way it's understood from this Midrash and from other sources, Kabbalistic sources as well, is that the first human being was actually created with two sides, two faces, back to back, one dynamic, another dynamic. And then God separated them, creating two distinct beings. And then ultimately the goal was that they should once again reunite. So I'll ask the Klotz Kasha. The Klotz Kasha is the obvious question. The obvious question is, why create them as one and separate them just so that they should come back together again? What's the point? Sounds like a real waste of time. Either if you want them together, so just keep them together and don't separate them. If you want them separate, so then start them off separate. What's this business of? They start off connected, then they're separated, and then they become connected again. What's going on here? They were connected beforehand. You're saying it was so connected they didn't even know the difference.
They have to do the work.
I have to do the work. Okay, that's true. Good. There's another element as well. Yeah.
So maybe they separate, and then they see that sameness.
And then they come together on the core essence. That's true. There's another subtle distinction between the first connection and the second connection. The first connection, they were back to back. They were facing away from each other, back to back. When they're separated, and then they can come back together on their own, with their own work, true. But they come together in a deeper way, face to face. Face to face. This is a very big theme and a strong theme in Kabbalah, the union that is face to face. Very important theme in Kabbalah, not back to back, but face to face. Because the face connotes a depth. The back, you can't really tell what a person's thinking from the back. The back is a little bit anonymous. The face shares what they're thinking, how they're feeling, the mood. You can see intelligence and wisdom and joy and sadness, God forbid, on someone's face. The face is the portal to the soul. So connecting face to face alludes to, expresses, refers to a deep essential connection, one that has yesod. The back-to-back connection, the what I would call the default before the separation connection, that original connection was just back-to-back. That's a surface connection. The message for us is the following. What type of relationship are we striving for? What are we working on? Is it just that back-to-back connected because we're connected surface-based relationship? Or is there something deeper, a face-to-face model that we are working on and achieving, where we're connecting in a deep fashion? The message here also is very powerful in the sequence of things. The message of this biblical narrative and the Midrashic exposition and the Kabbalistic revelation is the following. That a relationship can begin a little superficial, and over time, with the right focus, attention, mindfulness, and work, reach a place of much greater depth of face-to-face. Just because a relationship begins, perhaps, in a more superficial way, doesn't mean that it can't be deepened and the two parties develop a really close yesod-type bond between them. In general, Kabbalah speaks of four realities, four worlds. This is not part of the focus of this particular course because we're talking about the 10 soul powers, which mirror the 10 sefirot. But Kabbalah teaches the 10 sefirot exist on four different levels, four different planes of reality, four different worlds. There's a world of Atzilut, the world of Bria, the world of Yetzirah, and the world of Asiya. The world of emanation, creation, formation, and action. We live in the world of action. It's the lowest, most physical plane of existence. The four worlds correspond to these dynamics within the human being. The physical, the emotional, the intellectual, and the spiritual. And the question is, where is our compatibility with the other? Is it physical? Is it emotional? Is it intellectual? Is it spiritual? From below to above. I would say that in society, most, at least initially, a lot of the thought process, a lot of the conversation, the internal conversation, a lot of the assessment has to do with the lowest level. Is there physical compatibility? Am I attracted to the other person? Right? The physical part of it becomes like the big discussion. Let alone if there's an emotional connection, wow, we both love and feel connected with goldfish, forget about it. You love that movie that made you cry, that made me cry, oh my God, we are emotionally connected, that's it, soulmates. But wait a second, what about the intellectual? Do you see the world the same way? Let alone do you have a spiritual compatibility? Do you share similar values and truths in life? The highest point of compatibility is the spiritual. So I look at it as the inverse pyramid, right? Where a pyramid is usually broader at the base and pointed at the top. If you reversed it, if you turned it upside down, to base a relationship on the physical dynamic, physical piece of it, is to build an entire structure on pretty much no foundation. Why do I say no foundation? And I really mean no foundation. Why no foundation? Because if there's one thing that changes about a person, it's the physical. The one thing that we know about a person that will change, without a doubt. I mean, this is not, I hope I'm not revealing anything. No one in history looked the same when they were 5, 15, 25, 35, 45, 55, 65, 75, 85. It's not possible. Yet. It's not possible. It's not possible to build a structure, a tower, a whole, right, a skyscraper on such a narrow foundation. Because at this point in time, I like the way you looked. Not that we shouldn't be attracted to the people that we are significant other. Of course we should. But again, what's the foundation? The foundation should be the strongest piece to support the whole building, the whole binyan. It's got to be the strongest and the most stable. You don't want to build on a fault line, right? You're not building on something that's moving. That's crazy. That's why you and I are not in California right now. I'm kidding. That's not why we're not in California. Right? No disrespect to California. I love California, right? But you don't build on a fault line. That doesn't make any sense. You don't build on something that's moving. So, but again, that's the way, you know, society has somehow evolved, where the first thing we notice and the first, like, one of the first things on many people's, you know, on the checklist is the appearance. And it has to be there, but then you have the emotional. But the point is like this, that how often do we speak about, in the context of dating and assessing compatibility, the spiritual stuff, the real deep values? I've heard from many, not one, not ten, more than many individuals that dated for many years, several years, a few years, lived with the other person, etc. And eventually they found out, you know, this person, he or she didn't want this or wanted that. And I didn't know. Like, you didn't know. Why didn't you know? Because you didn't ask. Why didn't you ask? Because we didn't talk about these things. Because that's too deep. It's too yesodi. We don't talk about those things. We just talk about the easy stuff. We talk about what movies we like, what music we like, and we talk about the easy stuff, the surface stuff. We're afraid of yesod, and it's not healthy. It's not healthy for us. It's not healthy for our relationships. It's not healthy for the other person. If you want a deep connection with someone, it's about the yesod. It's about knowing who you are, knowing who the other person is, and not being afraid to talk about it. So I propose the following. Yeah, this is a message for anyone looking for love. Go to the next party, bar, lounge, rooftop, whatever it is, and go over to somebody and say, what are your values? No, that's not going to work. You'll be, no, they'll be like, who are you? And you're weird. I'm not talking to you. That is the weirdest thing. What kind of line is that anyway? That's ridiculous. Well, my rabbi said so. Well, yeah. Don't throw me under the bus. I was kidding. But here's the thing. It's important for us that we know who we are and that we get to know who the other person is. We once had a speaker here in this room who said, she was so funny. She was hilarious. She said, such a beautiful point. She said, imagine you're in a new city. You move to a new town and you have tremendous, God forbid, tremendous tooth pain. You need a dentist. How are you going to find a dentist? She said, I'll give you two options. Number one, you ask somebody you know. Do you know a dentist? Do you have a dentist? Who's a good dentist? Or you look up dentists, right? She says, or here's another model. Go into a bar, find someone that you find attractive, find someone that you're attracted to, have some drinks with them, have multiple dates with them, right, for months. Eventually, 6 to 8 months later, pop the big question. By the way, are you a dentist? Are you a dentist? Because that's actually what I'm looking for. But somehow we do this with our deepest relationships. We find someone who we like to look at, who we find attractive, and we go, and we go, and we go, and eventually, maybe we must the curse to say, are you a dentist? I'm looking for, these are my values. I need a dentist. Do you happen to fit into that? Such a, you know, a convoluted way of doing this. But sometimes that's the way it is. You have to have a little surface, and then progress, right? Like Adam and Eve, back to back, and then face to face. But we can't forget the main point, which is that face to face connection. So, when it comes to education, when it comes to parenting or mentoring, when it comes to charitable giving, when it comes to relationships and intimacy, we can't forget about the yesod. Bless you. We can't forget about the deep connection. Because none of these areas work the way they're meant to work when it's just the external surface connection. Education is not really education. Mentoring is not mentoring. Parenting is not parenting. Tzedakah is not tzedakah. And relationship and intimacy is not a relationship, it's not real intimacy. If it's lacking that yesod connection. So, may we all begin with ourselves. We have to be connected with ourselves first. You can't be connected with someone else unless you first have to connect with yourself. And be open to knowing who we are and what we're about. Number one, we should be fearless in knowing ourselves. And then we should develop connections with others in a healthy and meaningful way. May we all practice Yesod mentally and safely. Thank you very much for joining me tonight for lesson number 7 of the Kabbalah of Character.